Welcome to episode 199 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, we read Conan, God in the Bowl and Other Stories by Kurt Busiek. And now, the cast begins.
Which one?
I don't know yet. I think I'll just do the random one. And, you know, healing is easy. I just press chain heal like a whole bunch and run around not doing anything.
And that's all you really need to do.
Yeah.
And that's still way more helpful than most of the people are going to be in the battleground.
Also true.
Ooh, I need to do Terran Mill.
Oh, it's so fun! Did I tell you how fun it is?
Does it go all the way until the 6th, or does it end? When does it end?
I actually don't know, but it's really, really good. It's the most fun I've had in a BG, like, in a long, long, long time. Because it's just, like, a free-for-all in the middle, and then as you kill people, your rank goes up, so you're worth more points, and whichever side, like, gets to 300 points first wins.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Like, it's just, you know how in every battleground there's a bunch of people running around in the middle, like, not
doing anything?
They just, yeah. So that's, like, the entirety of this battleground, so it channels all of that stupidity into, like, a really productive usage.
Yes. That's awesome. That's a really inventive way to fix that problem.
I have an engineering works now.
I really hope they keep it. What? Like, I just, oh, it's fun. Oh, I need to do Molten Core, too.
Seriously, though, this is, like, the best expansion. I love it so much.
Okay, yeah, so it goes all the way until January, so I'll still have enough time to do it.
Oh, January?
Yeah, January 5th.
Is that the same for Molten Core?
Yeah.
Okay, good,
all
because...
the 10th anniversary stuff is until January 5th.
I was about to, like, freak the fuck out if I didn't get in my Molten Core run.
Ooh, let's make that Dark Moon card create.
Yeah. Yeah, boy.
What did I get?
Yeah, boy.
Five of them.
So ballerish.
I only create one a day, maybe. My guys failed a quest.
My top three followers are all level 100, and they have item levels like 615 to 620, I want to say.
That's You're followers. Doing way better than I am on Garrison.
Yeah, I'm level 93. I just, I'll be on my phone, taking a poop break at work every hour. Logging in remotely to my computer at home and doing my missions. All right, you guys ready?
Sure.
Yep.
What's a good word?
Barbaric.
Yeah, it's a VP, and you just want to make sure you're snake-y. Thorough.
I was going to say two snakes facing each other.
Okay, I was thinking that too, Jen, but I wasn't sure if it'd be too
long. It's a lot of words.
Slithering? Forked tongue?
Okay, everybody, welcome to another Ophidian episode of the Atomic Pirate Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
And Jen.
Hello.
And this week we're wrapping up our Volume 2 series of episodes by reading Conan, Volume 2, God in the Bowl and Other Stories by Kurt Busiek, collecting issues number 7 and 9 to 14. They skipped 8 because it was a different author-artist thing. So 7 and 9 to 14. So
I read 8, though.
You read 8, though? Was it any good? It wasn't in my trade.
So I bought a bundle on... Dark Horse Digital.
Ah.
So I had to buy, I have the first volume in physical trade, so I had to buy issue 7 individually, and then there was a bundle of 8 to 15, and I bought that for like, it was like $6.
Okay, nice.
So
actually,
nice.
And yeah, so 8 was like Conan's childhood, part of Conan's childhood.
Okay.
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I might go back and get that one then.
No, it was a good issue. I mean, it wasn't, like you said, it wasn't Kurt Busiek, but... I was like, oh, I read 7, I'm going to read 9, I'll just read this one too.
Yeah, fucking.
And it's a standalone story, like, you're not missing out on anything in relation to 7 and then 9 to 14, but, you know, I think it was good. So, you know, check it out.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah. So, anyway, this was my choice. Last week we read Jen's, and before that we read David's. This is my choice for... a trade I wanted to read the second volume of. Because, you know, we read volume 1 of Conan, and I really, really liked it. And I don't know if it was because I was just jonesing for something in the adventure genre, or if it really was outstanding. And I think, in my memory, it really was actually pretty good.
Yeah, I remember enjoying it as well. So I thought this was a good choice.
Yeah, so I was wanting to see how it held up, like, going forward. Because I remember what I really liked about Conan was that in my head, in my memory, Conan is this, like, indomitable He-Man kind of character that can just, through pure strength and protagonist power, just push through any problem. But in the first trade, we see him get completely owned by the Hyperboreans, and we see, like, his dreams get shattered and see him get destroyed. And that's kind of how the comic ends. Mm-hmm. He's betrayed and destroyed. And so I was like, okay, where does Volume 2 go from there?
Well, you know, like, I think that's kind of a good, like, in looking back at Volume 1 and what we've seen in this issue, or this set of issues, or trade, I guess you'd call it, the first volume, you know, Conan, he succeeded in that he got away, right? Mm-hmm. But what's cool about this, what's great about that is, like, he got knocked down a lot, not kinda. And in this one, we see him starting to be built back up. Because I think he was, I mean, we don't really know much about what happened to Conan before Volume 1. Obviously, he had some life experiences before that, because he didn't just spring up out of the ground.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But he was kind of, like, haughty and
super cocky.
Yeah. And so we see him knocked down a peg by these forces that he doesn't understand. You know, there's magic and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, he always swears to Crom, but Crom is a hands-off kind of god.
You do not want to be swearing to Crom, because he's just as likely to smite you for asking for help.
Yeah, so he's like, F you, Crom.
Like, if you're weak enough to need my help, then you don't deserve my blessing. Which is awesomely brutal.
Yeah. And so it's like he gets a taste of, and I'm using air quotes here, the real world. What mysteries there are out in the world. You know, he, with the Hyperboreans, he experiences their magic. There's these people, this group of people that it's not so easy to just punch and stab them, right? Mm-hmm. And so he, like I said, he gets a taste of what it can be really like out in the world. And so now when we see him in, you know, in God in a Bowl and stuff, we see him, he's kind of more down to earth. He's more weary of stuff. But he sticks to being Conan. He's just a little bit wiser now. And he succeeds in this story, you know. This one ends on a high note.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this one, you're right, we're calling him wiser. I feel like he really, he's discovered that he still has no patience for magic or any of that kind of stuff. But he's figured out that his brute strength and abilities are more than enough to help him get by if he's smart about it. Because right. Before, he just went into Hyperborea headlong, figuring, fuck, they're all awesome and that's great, but I'm strong as fuck, so I can totally kick anything's ass. And he wasn't, like, considering that he might encounter something he couldn't defeat. And so now he's like, okay, with the God in the Bowl, he's telling the truth as he can do it. He's smart. He doesn't just attack everybody, like the investigator and everything. Like, he's picking his fights more and choosing when to strike, rather than just throwing himself into all of it. And the same thing with Thothamon's monster. Like, mm-hmm. he has the other woman get tangled in the roots so that he's not the one doing it. He's not just, like, blindly following orders and then just hacking away at things. I guess, although he does end up getting inside the monster by just blindly hacking away at things. Yeah. And getting it, yeah.
Well, he's inside a different monster.
It doesn't quite hold up, but
the tendency to do stupid things still, certainly.
Yeah.
It's just, he's a little, I will not say he's more cautious, but I think, I don't know, like, maybe just a little more tempered about it, more even-keeled. Like, for instance, I completely expected him to kill the Inquisitor and the guards when he was being accused for murder. And then he didn't. And that seemed like he was learning something, you know. And at the end he says, like, oh, I've overcome civilization, I'm better than it. But which is so great. I love that scene. But I think, you know, when he deals with this murder accusation and when he deals with the high priest of Ibis, he is showing that he's learning how to exist as a civilized person, because instead of just killing everybody or threatening people, he's more prone to working with them.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he's, I don't know, he's matured a little.
Tempered was the exact word I was going to use. We're all on the same page. But I gotta say, it's interesting, when I first started reading this in the first episode, Conan comes off as such a bully when he's talking with that magistrate in the town where he kills the two dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was immediately, at the first issue, I was like, I don't know how I actually feel about this. Because he just murders them, and then he basically bullies the magistrate into sniveling away from the law. And, like, on the one hand, I want to not like Conan for doing that, except then, I mean, you know they deserved it. You know they deserved it as the reader. Nobody else in town knows it. For everybody else in town probably thinks they're just dudes going about their way. And the magistrate doesn't know it. So it kind of doesn't excuse his behavior, really. Except when the magistrate then just starts like, oh, yeah, of course. Well, you know, our law only applies to our people. And they weren't really our people. Like, he backpedals and gets all sniveling. And so, like, you kind of have to take Conan's side there by default, I think, but it doesn't feel right.
You know, I don't even think it's because the magistrate's so sniveling. It's that, I think it's not even that Conan is necessarily a bully, because he does, you know, hurt weaker people and has no problem with it. But at the same time, everyone in this entire world that he exists in is a giant flaming asshole. So I can't even say he's a bully so much as he's operating by the parameters of the, you know, of the culture in which he exists, where people are really cruel to each other and they hurt each other and kill each other, and it's kind of one of those, like, kill or be killed kind of places. I don't know necessarily how accountable Conan can be held for his misdeeds when we look around him and we see so many other misdeeds.
Yeah.
That's an interesting take on it.
Yeah, because you're right. Even when he gets caught in the building where the like container is with the snake in it, like, everybody there's a dickbag. And for a while, I'm even thinking, like, the investigator is fine. I don't remember his name, but the guy who's, like, basically the detective on the scene when he catches them. Like, for a while, he seems fine, because he's not instantly detaining and killing and accusing Conan. He's, like, honestly sitting there trying to figure out what happened and is working through it. And I'm like, oh, this is surprising. I kind of like this. But then when the bratty royal guy that hired Conan comes in, he's like, oh, yeah, we can sweep it under the rug. We know how you people can be, you rich types. And we know that the law doesn't apply to the rich the same way it does everyone else. I was like, oh, I liked you for a while, dude. So you're right. Like, even the guys that you kind of like for a while turn into bad people. Maybe Calenthes is the only one that doesn't come off as a total dickbag.
Yeah, but
but even he, like, willingly sends people to their deaths.
And there's a debate, too, you know, when he and Conan are talking about it. Are you willing to sacrifice all these other people potentially to save one person? And, you know, what kind of person has to do that? And I don't think there's a good answer to that question. Because it's like, well, do you let your friend die or do you let a bunch of people die? And it's hard to be utilitarian. But, like, even the good guy in this comic is subjected to kind of fairly heavy moral questions about whether or not his actions are just.
Yeah, because he straight up says, I need you, Janissa, and I need you, Conan, with me, and these other guards are going to stay behind, basically to give up their lives just to slow the monster down, because I know that it can, that they can't stop it. Like, that's fucked. Like, I am sacrificing these four for all intents and purposes, good, honest people's lives just to slow the thing down a little bit? I don't know about that, bro.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, he's saving a bunch of other people. I think he might be saving the world by doing this, but at the same time, it's such a distasteful concept. And, you know, the thing, too, it felt like he wasn't the only person who was able to deal with the stone. I know he warded off the monster with his spells and gave them time to do it, but it's like, I don't know, he didn't kill the monster, he didn't break the stone. His presence was actually arguably unnecessary in that scenario. So you're kind of like, did you just save your own skin? And that wasn't his intent, clearly, but it kind of worked out that way.
Yeah, that's, I don't know, that's something that's hard to determine in this comic, is people's intent versus what ends up happening to them. Because everybody in this, you're right, aside from being giant assholes, are also kind of shady customers, too. Like, that's kind of where their assholishness comes from, is they're willing to lie through their teeth to people's faces. I don't know.
Yeah, and then you have to ask, like, when everyone is in such a super harsh world, is it really, like, that unexpected they would act like this? Should they be expected to act better?
I mean, yeah, honestly, I wasn't super off-put by anything in this world until we got to Janissa's background.
Oh god, yeah, her that origin. Was... That was just dark for
like,
dark
sake. I, like, could not read that.
What bothered me the most about it was that it was very clear that they were just like, rape is gritty, let's put in a lot of rape, because this is a gritty place to be, and we're gonna show people how gritty it is.
I know, I was thinking, like, couldn't you just have her get killed and then have the Bone Woman, like, do something to bring her back, scarred but stronger? Like, something like that, you know? Like, I don't know why it had to go straight to where it did. That was uncomfortable the first time, and then it kept, like, salting that wound. It kept, like, just going back to that well and making it worse and worse. Being like, and then there were two, and it lasted longer, and then there were three, and it lasted longer. And they're like, I killed one, and then they overtook me, and it did it again. And it's like, oh god, just stop. Please just stop.
Like, there's also this super disturbing moral in there, too, where what they're basically saying is, how did you get so strong? And she says, I was raped a lot. Like, that is not a good message in any way that anyone could think of. It's pretty offensive, honestly. Like,
yeah, and that's frankly not how you get strong.
No, it's not.
And she could also just gone to the gym a lot.
Like, they're trying to play on this idea, like, oh, the world's so bad, and people in this world are strong because bad things happen to them. But I don't feel like it correlates in this sense.
Well, I think she had something bad happen to her because she was naive. That was her sin in this world, was being naive. Because Conan, stupid as he might be, is at least not naive. He knows when to be cynical.
True, but naivete
shouldn't get this kind of punishment.
It shouldn't. And sometimes in stories, it does. But I have this pretty big problem with the connection just being like, hey, I got raped a whole bunch, now I'm really strong. And because that's directly what they're saying. It wasn't even that she fought or that she, you know, thought it over. The old woman has a throwaway line saying, like, oh, think about everything you did wrong here and how to make it better. But that's not the focus of the scenario.
No. The focus scenario is the brutal repeated rape.
Yes. So, you know, that's not okay. That's not an okay way to do storytelling, and it's really lazy. Like, if we throw out all the other offenses that are grouped in there, and from a straight storytelling perspective, it's really lazy character development. Yeah. And that's the least of its sins. So
that's true. That's the worst thing in this world, but there's a lot of people doing bad stuff. Okay. So let's break down the three parts of this, right? Like, there's issue 7, basically, where Conan is a broken man and comes back for redemption. And then there's the story with the god snake thing. And then the last one is the Thothamon and Calenthas.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you guys think of the whole, like, investigation story? Was that compelling for you?
That was actually my favorite of the stories that we got here. Because it kind of showed, I thought it was a good way to show potentially new readers that there can be more to this than just stabbing and punching. Because it's like a murder mystery, right? It's like Clue, you know? There's a bunch of people in a room and a dead body, and they're trying to figure it out, use their brains to figure out what happened. And sometimes other people go away and die, you know? Like, the lights go out and somebody else dies.
Yeah.
So I thought it was, you know, it was really neat because you see, you know, Conan is this, like, sword and sandal character, and he's in this situation that's like, that would you expect Conan to be in CSI, basically? No. And so I thought it was just a cool, like, it was just a nice departure from my expectations.
Yeah, and I really appreciated the way that the narrative, like, was able to pull you into the investigator's point of view. Like, there has to be a killer. There has to be a killer around here. This thing came back, and that's, you know, that's fine and all, and it looks like there's a snake thing, and whatever. You're crazy. Neighbor, you're crazy. The killer's around here somewhere. And, like, through him trying to figure it out rationally, I was completely removed from the idea that this is fucking Conan, and of course it's a snake god. Like, I just, like, I got so wrapped up in it that I was also trying to figure out who the killer was, and then I'm like, no, this is Conan. It was the snake god the entire fucking time. Of course it was. How did I not just stick to that the entire fucking time? As soon as somebody mentioned it could be a snake god, why would I not know it was a snake god?
It's like, obviously, god.
That's your Conan god.
But, and I think the snake god, the way they went about it was kind of cool. Like, the way they kind of showed its power and how it worked, aside from just the killing people, how it just, like, looked so perfect. You know, I did like the Thothamon and Calenthas / Set versus Ibis kind of thing going on in there too. mostly because when Calenthas and Janissa and Conan were riding up to the town and Calenthas said, "Those aren't shadows," I was like, "That's no moon." It was like, "Oh, you're Obi-Wan." Which is kind of what he is. He's an old sorcerer.
He's Egyptian Obi-Wan.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. So what did you guys think of the idea of Conan traveling through these different regions and, like, he's pushing southward from Hyperborea? Did you feel any, like, distinctive difference as he was moving through these regions? Because I know in the books and in the expanded mythology of this world, each region has a lot of lore behind it and a very different feel. So you kind of think, like, moving through the regions, you should kind of get a different feel for each of them too. Did it feel like you were moving through different parts of the world, or was it just like roving Ronan kind of thing, or Ronin kind of thing, just like going from town to town, but nothing really changes?
The backdrop of each city certainly changes, because there's like, what's cool is, like, when he went, as he moved north, the regions changed. Like, he was in when we get to the part where he meets Calenthas and Janissa, he you know, it's more of like a, it's like a redwood type forest, you know, coniferous forest type of place. And then as they go farther north to Calenthas's hometown, it's like kind of rocky and craggy and stuff. So in that way, it does change a bit, and you get the feel of, like, hard and long travel. But, you know, the people, at least the common people, tend to be the same for the most part. So...
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that, like, the comic starts with him in the snow.
Mm-hmm.
And him not mm-hmm. able to find food because he's, like, because it's so frozen. Because he's still in the super far north. But by the end, you're right, there's, like, no vegetation. I get the feeling he's almost on the edge of a desert where he is. Like, it's hot and cold, and there's extreme climate there. Because you're right, it's all craggy and rocky. It feels, like, barren. So I... But that's in retrospect. But, like, when you're reading in it, it doesn't... Maybe it's because the people don't change, because the people are all just complete assholes.
Mm-hmm.
And because he's... Well, I think he does mention something about how he's moving into the civilized part of the world. So it might be like a bunch of these countries all around here are all like into their cities. Bythunrians, and the Numenians?
Mm-hmm.
What their names are? I don't know.
Numenians.
But then you get the sense that Conan is from a more savage people. Like, he keeps mentioning how he's a hill people and from the dark hills of Samaria. And then they mention, like, the savagery of Hyrcanians, too. They bring up Hyrcanians once around. That's Red Sonja, where she's from. So it's kind of, like, it feels like there's a bigger mythology here in the comic, and it feels like it's just right there, but it doesn't feel rich enough to actually reach out and grab.
Well, I think that's okay, because I feel like we're supposed to be experiencing this world along with Conan.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's like our focal point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you wanted to know about Hyperborea, maybe like Robert E. Howard could just write a history book about it, and you could just read that and say, but would that be as interesting? I don't know. It might be interesting in a separate way, in a different way, but it's cool because we're on the journey with Conan, you know?
Yeah.
I like the idea of discovering, because he doesn't know about these cultures or anything either. It's not like he's keeping a secret from us or something.
Yeah.
We're going through the motions with him. And so it's kind of a journey of discovery for Conan and us as readers.
Yeah, and Conan doesn't give a fuck about the cultures of each of these people. Like, you're right, that's kind of what I want to know, is like, what are Numenian people like? But he doesn't give a fuck. They're city people, they're all weak. That's all he knows, and he just wants to know where he can get a beer.
But like he says to Calenthus, you know, he's starting to learn about the different gods. Like, obviously he knows Crom, that's his god. But then he knows, like, Ishtar and Mitra and now Ibis and Set. You know, he's learning about all these gods as he goes. So, you know, we're learning about them too as he does, and it's kind of cool because we're learning about the cultures and mythologies as we go, and that's, I think, a great way to keep a reader interested.
Yeah, it definitely strings you along wanting more. And you're right, there are those breadcrumbs, like with breadcrumbs. Like with Mitra, because in the beginning, when he's in that that first like inn in the super far north, the guy behind the counter says to get him a beer, and he says something like, "Mitra, get this man a beer." And I think he's saying like, "Oh God, get this guy a beer, like right now."
Yeah. But
at the time, I thought the woman's name was Mitra.
I had the same reaction.
Yeah.
So now, I still don't know if Mitra is a man or a woman, but like in that instance, maybe that's the first time Conan's heard the name. And so then you're kind of there with him. Is that her name? I don't know. I just want a beer. That's what's important. But then you hear it more and more, and you kind of pick up, oh, it's actually one of the gods. They're saying it like a god name. And that is really cool how you do pick that up along with him. And you kind of get a sense of why he has a disdain for civilization as he's progressing through it, aside from when he describes his first impression of walking into the city walls. That was good.
But it's interesting, like, at the end of this little grouping of issues, he's learned how to almost play the game, as it were, with when it comes to cities. Because he has this, like, you know, he narrates at the end of issue 14 about how he doesn't feel, like, immediately boxed in and stuff. Sorry, I'm looking at this on my phone because the app is actually, the Dark Horse app is actually really good. But it's hard to, like, navigate.
Hard to navigate and read through?
Yeah, I can't find the quote I was thinking of, but he seems to be much more comfortable in the city than he did before.
Yeah, you definitely get that sense, especially when he's leaving. Like, maybe it's just because they all feel a slight debt to him, so he can feel comfortable there. And he knows that they're good-ish people, because this is where Calenthas lives, so it's not, like, so douchebaggy of a city if he chooses to live there.
But, yeah, okay, sorry, Andy. That's
okay.
I found the quote, and he says, "People smiled and nodded as he passed. They knew of him, knew he'd helped save them. In other cities, he felt confined, trapped, as if the walls and buildings hemmed him in. But now," and then the narration, like, cuts because he meets
the bone woman?
No, the merchant from...
Oh, the merchant from before, traveling with the horse.
With the ladies.
That was great. I love that he's traveling with them now.
And then he says to them, he says, "Mitra, Ibis, Set, and more, bring me your worst world. I'll take it on.
Yeah.
And I'll triumph."
Yeah. But you know what? That is cool how he says he has that feeling of not feeling trapped. Because he's a hillman, right? And he's used to adventuring. So the idea of being in a city, like, and the first thing he says is, "I never understand why you trap yourself behind the walls." Like, in the beginning, he mentions feeling trapped and confined. But I think by the end, he gets the idea and feeling and sense of place that people get from living in these communities. Like, he got it the quick way, by saving everybody's lives. Right, that's the quick and easy way to get a town behind your back. But, you know, if you live in a place for 10, 20 years, you get to know the neighbors, you know, you help each other out, and you get a sense of feeling of place and community, and he understands that by the end, why people would ever want to live in a city. He kind of gets the idea a little bit. And... Yeah, he probably gets a sense of, "Well, I've conquered civilization. I understand this now. Yeah, whatever. Whatever gods you want. I got civilization. I can do anything." I like that that's, like, his greatest opponent, is civilized society.
Well, he is a barbarian.
I hope that merchant sticks around a long time. I just love that he's hanging out with those women now, because all he did was pay for them for Conan.
And he didn't even want to. He was like, no. I guess.
I wonder how much they cost. I don't know, that's an inappropriate question that doesn't matter. Like, is he traveling with them because he was so set back that he's hoping, like, I don't know. Because he didn't have a lot of money. I remember that was a thing. Like, the thieves were teasing him for how much money he had. Oh, those thieves, they had it coming. Fuck those guys. But again, you know, there's a moral question there, too, because when they're taking the thieves away, and they're like, no, come on, we didn't do it. And the guards mentioned something like, "We'll make sure that you hang for this." I was like, they were being douchebaggy, yeah, but I don't know about hanging them.
Yeah, this is a bit extreme.
That was... Well, I mean, they're probably not going to actually be hanged, right?
No.
The
guy will recognize that it wasn't them.
Yeah, he's going to be like...
But I get that, like, frantic sense of, like, oh, come on, somebody. Somebody say, "It was this other dude, and he ran away while you weren't looking. It really wasn't them. But, you know, they also weren't heroes." Like, somebody? Nobody? Okay, all right, fine.
Yeah, I like how everybody in the tavern, they don't just stay quiet. They, like, stand up and say, "Oh, yeah, it was definitely these guys." Like, they didn't have to do that either. Yeah. Although, they did see the dudes being, like, incredibly awful. So.
Well, yeah, they straight up, like, bullied a guy and stole his money.
Yeah, but he's still... They don't deserve to die.
Which is what Conan did in the first issue.
He
bullied two guys and stole their money.
No, he left the money with the innkeeper, actually. That's how we know Conan's a good person.
That's true. Yeah.
We just know he's not motivated by money.
No, he's totally lawful good.
Oh, he's not lawful good. That's for damn sure. There's nothing lawful about Conan.
No.
He's definitely chaotic good.
He's chaotic neutral.
Yeah, neutral. If it neutral, suits him.
No. Neutral at best.
I don't know. I feel like he is... I think he... His moral compass points to the right. As opposed to the wrong.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. But I think he's just as easily used as he is to... Because the... when he gets caught, like, stealing the thing, or going in to steal the thing from the magistrate. No, that wasn't it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. When he gets hired to be a thief, a big-time thief, like, he honestly believes that the person who's hiring him isn't necessarily bad. Like, he's completely okay with it up until the very end when the guy throws Conan under the bus. And then he's like, oh,
well, I think
you're a dickbag. Okay.
But I think he's like a bounty hunter or a mercenary, right? He's loyal, or he's not. I don't know if he's loyal, but he's truthful and he's dependable, right? Somebody is paying him to do a job, and he's going to do the job.
Yeah,
and I think I got the impression. Well, maybe I seem to remember that the guy who hired him made him think that he was stealing back property from somebody who was bad.
Yeah, made it twisted. Like, I just... Lex Luthor would completely own Conan.
Yeah, that has to do with... Conan is definitely naive.
Yeah.
He's probably less naive than he was in volume in the first trade, but... And I think we can all agree that he is wiser now, but he hasn't gained that much wisdom.
No, not so
much. He's trusting, I think, to, especially when he's like partying with somebody.
Yeah, well, when he's drunk. I like how he gets drunk and wants to tell stories.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, it's kind of like my grandfather. Okay, I can relate to this. So did you guys, do you think this one held up to Volume 1? Like, this kind of... Because I really, really liked Volume 1. I'm going to go back and reread it and see if I liked it now as much as I did the first time. I might have just been really crushing for a sword and sandal adventure. Mm-hmm. But I don't think this one's... It's not as good in my memory.
Well, I think it's hard to... It's like with movie sequels, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because...
It's not a fair question.
Yeah, I think it's not going to hold up because when we read the... Well, it's not going to hold up in some ways. Because when we read the first story, or the first trade, it was a new thing and we didn't... I mean, I'm speaking for... When I say we, I'm really speaking for me because I don't want to put words in your guys' mouth. But, you know, I was, like, really excited. And because I'd read some Conan stories as a kid and, of course, I'd seen the movies with Arnold. And the
musical.
And the musical, which was amazing. And so I was really excited to read this comic. And then, you know, I loved it. I thought it was awesome. But going into this one, I have high expectations because of how much I loved Volume 1. And so it's hard to judge it in this. It's not hard, but it's I think it's unfair to judge it from the same perspective. So I did like this one a lot, and I think that has a lot to do with the fact that we see great progression of Conan's character.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's not that much different, but he certainly has learned from his experiences. And, you know, we talked about this a lot already in the episode, about how he's become wiser and he's a little bit more cautious about things, but he's still like same old Conan too, for the most part. And so this certainly captures the same tone as the first trade, as far as like a sword and sandal type of thing. And you know, it's a great example of this, of that genre. But what's, like I mentioned earlier, talking about the God in the Bowl, we see some examples of how, you know, how this world, how different interactions exist in this world. It's not just about stabbing and slashing. There is civilization, and they have some rules. You know, we see this, this inspector, he's like legitimately trying to solve this case and do justice. And so he doesn't just jump to the conclusion that it's Conan because he's this, you know, scary looking man from the hills. And this totally inept guard said that he did it. He actually tries to solve the crime, and he doesn't submit to the pressure from his lackeys, who are like, oh, it's obviously him, you know. He genuinely tries to investigate it. And then, you know, there is disappointment because of the, you know, the rich guy comes in and he's like, oh, you know, we'll just sweep this under the rug. It was all a misunderstanding. We understand because you're the governor's son or whatever.
Yeah, governor's nephew, I think it was, or whatever shit.
And so, yeah, that's disappointing, but it's a civilized culture when compared to Conan's people.
Yeah.
But
furs and huts.
But people are people, right? And this investigator is, you know, he's trying to do his job right way, but at the same time, he's like got to look out for himself. And this person in a privileged position, can make his life harder potentially. And you know, it's disappointing, like you said, in the fact that he is going to bend the rules for this guy. But our hero, you know, if the guy hadn't been a douche to Conan and not thrown him under the bus, everybody would have been okay, right? I mean, Conan would have gone free, and then this guy probably would have got the cup or whatever he wanted Conan to steal, and everybody would have gone on their way.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. It's like, he didn't have to be so awful. There was no actual need for it to happen, yet he just... It was the first thing he sprang to. It wasn't even that he waited to be accused. And the investigator was immediately like, oh, it's okay. You know, you're not in trouble. And he still was like, oh, no, it has nothing to do with me. It's this guy. You know, so I don't know. I kind of feel like Conan's people are bound to be more honorable. Like, they might be far more brutal and violent, but I get the sense that they keep their promises and stick with their allies and don't betray people needlessly, you know? And you get the sense that the Warrior's Code is kind of, you know, in a world where everyone is awful, the Warrior's Code is, like, maybe the closest you can get to good.
Yeah, because you have to make sure that that guy has your back.
Yeah.
If you're going to be a warrior beside another warrior, you have to make sure that the guy you're next to isn't going to turn and kill you. It's like the honorability of it is one of the, has to be probably one of the highest things in their culture. And to be betrayed like that is probably one of the biggest insults. But you know, David, you mentioned at the top how, like, you see Conan grow. And I think that's what carries this comic. Because it has to be ongoing and subtle. Because this is sword and sandal and sorcery, and it's like, it's super action-oriented, but it's still Conan, and it's all around Conan. And the only thing that carries over, really, across the stories is him. So he has to grow, and he has to stay an interesting enough character, even though he's basically a naive bull crashing into whatever scenario is put before him in the plot. He still has to be compelling as a character. And I think the comic does a really good job of sustaining that interest into the second volume, through, like, leading you further into the ongoing. Like, I want to see where he goes with the merchant. What happens with the merchant? Like, where they're going. Like, right now, he literally is just, fine, I'll go wherever for shiggles. Like, anywhere. It doesn't matter. He's basically man without a mission right now. Because we come into this trade, and he has a purpose. He's like, I'm going to hunt these two motherfuckers who betrayed us down. I'm going to murder the shit out of them. And then we'll see where we go from there. But right now, I got shit I need to do. So it was... There's something to carry you into this trade, but from here it's just like you have to be interested in Conan, and you have to be interested in the world, and you have to want to know what's coming next, just in a general sense. And I think it works well enough that I'm going to go by volume 3.
Oh no, it totally succeeds in that regard.
Plus, you miss out not getting the print edition because it. I remember volume 1, we talked about how the printing was great and the paper was great.
Oh, I'm going to go buy it.
This one was great, too.
I'm going to go buy it. I just, you know, I didn't have time to go to the comic book shop. Yeah. So I just... Hey, but you know what? Dark Horse's digital delivery system, I think, is the best.
Yeah,
it is very good.
They're so good.
Like I said, I read this on my iPhone, and it was, you know, maybe the font was a little bit small sometimes. But I didn't have any problems reading it. I thought it was totally fine. Their panel, the way it like goes from panel to panel is really smart. Like, because there's some digital comic reading apps that are stupid and don't do it well, like Marvel's. Comixology's is okay, but the Dark Horse one blows it out of the water. Spot fucking on. Yeah, I mean, I just read it on my iPhone, and it was solid. And I can see my whole, like, library. I can download stuff to read, you know, whenever I want. It's awesome. It's a great... I think, like I said, it's definitely the best example of digital comic delivery that I've encountered so far.
And it's a good thing that Dark Horse does it a good service, because the art in this is still really good.
Hey, and you know, you said too bad I didn't buy the hardback. Remember when we read Mind Management, I bought the issues we read digitally, and now I own the first three trades in hardback because I thought that was an amazing comic, and it is an amazing comic. It's so good. But anyways, that's, you know, go back and listen to that podcast if you didn't already.
Yeah, that was episode number, something or other.
It's on a long time ago. It was like, I think it was the best of 2013.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like a year ago.
Yeah, so let's transition to the art. What did you guys think of the art?
I really love the art for this series. Like, it's just... I think it fits the world really well. It fits kind of this mysterious sense of magic and... I don't know, like, it conveys fantasy well in the... I don't know how to put this, but, like, it's not comic-y, right? The lines are loose and not solid at all. It's dreamy. That's the word I'm looking for. Oh,
there you go.
It's very dreamy art.
Yeah, I love this art, too. The panel where Conan goes into the room with the child of Set, and there's the little partition and the head poking over the top.
So that creepy.
Was freaky. Yeah. I was like, what the hell is this thing? And like, I was like there with Conan, like, you know, he killed it, but he still was like so freaked out that he had to run away.
When he was like freaked out and entranced, it's, you know, so like it looked so freaky, but he kept describing it as like being perfectly grotesque.
And then when you get to the last page of the issue and you see the body and the separated head, it still looks creepy as hell. It's like the whole Uncanny Valley thing, right? It's like almost human.
Ugh. See, for me, I really, really love the art in the end when it's the Bone Woman, like, surrounded by her flames, talking to Conan in his dream.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, man, I know you are a fucking terrible person. I hate the shit out of you, but this page is beautiful.
Oh, yeah. When she was talking to Conan, I was like, leave him alone. He's going in alone.
Get the fuck out of his head. And then he wakes up and says, get out of my head. I'm like, yeah, Conan, that's right. But she just looks, she looks so good. Not like she's hot, but like, the art is intricate.
She's
and,
not hot, Andy. You're just talking about how she's surrounded by fire.
Well, yeah, I guess she's warm. But like, Jen, you're talking about like the looseness of it. And like, there's the looseness in the fire all around the page that makes the fire feel and look alive the way it should for a character like the Bone Woman. But then the detail and the line work on the Bone Woman's like face is so good. You get like this almost over-accurate sense of who she is, especially for it to have then been his dream.
Like, all the lines and wrinkles on her face are deeply in shadow, like, you know, like the flame is on her or off to at a weird angle. Like, I think the way Jen put it is really good. Like, the lines are so, you know, they're soft, and it's like the whole comic's always in motion.
Yes.
And the only way you can tell, like, Conan, when Conan's, like, still, it's, like, because his muscles are all tightened up and everything, you know? it's not the lines around his body. It's the, just, like, the comic looks great. It's, like, very fluid, and everything's always alive. It's just great art. No doubt about it.
Them pecs, though.
See, Conan, he's hot, not the Bone
Woman. Yeah, I'll have to see if my wife wants to read this for the beefcake.
Yeah, my wife just heard me from across the room, and she's like, "Did you say Conan's hot?" Yes, I did say he's hot because he is. Okay. Not like the Bone Woman. She has no idea what I'm talking about. I'm sure.
Well, you guys ready to rate this?
Yeah, I mean, let's do it. All
right. How about Jen goes first?
Okay. Oh, this is tough. I'm going to give this a 3.5. Partially because of the backstory with, like, the repeated gang rape. As I said earlier, like, it's just... There's no reason, even if you boil it down to, like, only narrative, it's just bad, stupid storytelling. And it was enough that it kind of, it takes away from some of the rest of what would be a really good trade. Well, it's still a really good trade, but what would be a much better trade without that?
Hmm.
It's really hard for me to judge this not comparing it to the first volume, mostly okay. Because I feel like the first volume we didn't see as much development, but it was so heartbreaking. And that was kind of its main thing, and this didn't deliver the same kind of emotional heft as volume one. So, I mean, I don't think that it promised any, but I'm a little sad that I didn't get more of that. But no, in general, I really did enjoy reading it. It was maybe a little slower or like less enthralling than the first volume, but it was still a good read. And as we just said, the art's gorgeous. So that's, you know, huge points for it. 3.5.
All right. David?
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a 4. I agree with... You know, I agree with you guys about the whole rape thing. That was one of the... I got to that part in the comic, and I wanted to speed through it. I mean, yeah, it's totally unnecessary. There's other ways to do it, and it just went like if they have to use that, it went on too long, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was good, even in comparison to the first one. Just like when I finished the first trade, after finishing this one, I want to keep reading. This is just a really great comic. You know, we often rate things in their own little vacuum, but I think this comic in the world, in the comics universe, is a great example of what kind of things you can do with comics. you know, people often, people like the casuals, I think, always jump to assume that comics are just, you know, capes and cowls and superheroes and Batman, right? But this is a great way to this comic does a good job of showing what this medium can do. And I think that's, those are often the best comics, you know, things like Mind Management. I think a lot of Dark Horse comics, you can just pick up and say, not just Dark Horse, Image too. A lot of the smaller publishers do a really good job of using the comics medium to tell different kinds of stories. And I think this, the Kurt Busiek run on Conan is very representative of that. So yeah, 4. Sorry, I kind of rambled there.
It's all right. I'm also going to give it a 4. Pretty much for all the stuff you guys said. I feel like Volume 1, like you said, David, it's hard not to do comparisons, but Volume 1 had a clear driving purpose. Like, Conan wanted to go see Hyperborea because he heard it was awesome. So he went to Hyperborea, and then shit happened, and then he fell down a cliff. Like, so, there was a clear driving purpose for most of that trade, except for the Frost Giant's daughter, which is a nice, like, side quest. You know, it's cool. But in this, there's not, like, a driving purpose for Conan. His driving purpose is to get revenge on those two dudes, and he does it, like, halfway through issue 7. So it's like, okay, what are we going to do now? Just walk around for a while? Cool, I can walk around with Conan. And it's neat for a good chunk of the time, but I think that's also why it kind of feels slower, because, you know, how do you define character? You define it as this person does these things and this and that, but in literature you can really define, like, the character is the character's purpose and its motive and what drives this character, this person. What are they trying to do in life? And in Volume 1, it's very clear. And in Volume 2 here, Conan is trying to find purpose.
I would disagree with that.
Yeah?
I think that Conan's purpose, while kind of vague, and it's kind of like a big idea, is to see the world. That's what he wants to do, and he's continuing to do that. Just in the first trade, his first stop is Hyperborea, and then now he's going to all these other places because he's seen Hyperborea, and it was fucked up, and he doesn't want to go back there. But he's continuing on the path of finding out what exists beyond the hills of his people.
It's the bear went over the mountain to see what he could see.
Yeah.
And you know what? And I feel like at the end of Volume 2, that's exactly what Conan is. Sitting on that cart with the two wenches and the merchant. Like, that's what he is. He's going over the mountain to see what he can see. And that's fine. Like,
well, see, just... I think that is his purpose. He doesn't necessarily have to have such a laser focused,
goal.
Goal, yeah. I was trying to use purpose again.
Yeah, it's just, that's what feels definitively different in this comic from the other one. And in this, his goal, you're right, is just more vague, which is probably why it feels slower. But by the end, you have a clear sense of what his goal is and what he's wanting to do. Because by the end, he's just chilling on the last couple pages of this trade are really good for giving you the vibe of what Conan wants from life. Because on that last page, Conan is happy. Conan is getting what he wants. And that's how you know what his motive is in life. Is when he's happy. And so now that that's established, you can move forward with the trade and kind of, or you move forward with the ongoing, kind of do whatever the F you want. And I'm down for that. Like, I'm down for that now. It's just, this was such a different vibe in terms of what Conan's driving force was.
Yeah.
I get you what you're saying. It's the same, but it feels different. But by the end, it's like, yeah, I'll get on that cart with you.
I don't know why I feel so like, contrarian with you, but I would disagree on the argument that it's slow also.
God damn it, David.
Because, I mean, so we read 7 and then 9 to 14.
Yeah.
I also read 8. And if you take 7, 8, and up to 14, there's actually 4 stories in there, you know? The first story is him getting revenge. If you read number 8, it's like Conan's secret origin. 9, 10, and 11 is... Or maybe it's just 9 and 10. Well, there's the God in the Bowl, and then there's the story with Calenthus.
Yeah.
And they at least God in the Bowl and the Calenthus story are kind of loosely connected because they both have to do with Tothamon and Set. But they're distinct stories. And Bone Woman. Yeah.
Yeah, slow's probably the wrong word. You're probably right. I don't know.
It is the wrong word. Get over it.
Okay. Either way, I'm giving it a 4. Something here feels different, and it's not tangible for me right now, as David has made bluntly apparent.
You're wrong.
Either way, I'm giving it a 4, because I love the art, and I love almost everything about it, except for the rape by demons, because that's just... You don't need that, and it's awkward, and it makes me want to skip those pages.
Yeah, it's completely unnecessary.
Yeah, you don't need it in the comics. It's just, you never did. Anyway, that wraps up episode 199.
That's like almost 200.
And that's what's coming next episode. So next episode is going to air December 26th, the day after Christmas. So we're just going to sit and talk and do some Christmas discussion. Talk about like Christmas and comics and, you know, kind of the parallels and how crossover happens between the real world and the comic book world. And, you know, DC comes out with a holiday issue every year. Is that something you kind of like, don't like? So we're just going to talk Christmas and timeliness and comics and all that kind of stuff and how it ties together. Also, it's episode 200. So, you know, that's a thing.
It's like a milestone, probably.
Yeah. The other thing that tends to happen in Christmas comics is that people die. That's the thing, too. So some of us might die. One of us might die. We all might die. I don't know, but it's episode 200. And if you go to our website at www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com or apsupercast.com, whichever you like, you'll see that we have nothing after episode 200. Nothing at all.
What does that mean?
Everything will change. Nothing will be the same after next week. And that's as straight as I can go for 30 seconds. That's next week. If you want to know what we have coming up after that, you're SOL. But if you want to listen to any of our 198 previous episodes, you can go to our website. I just gave them to you, but I'll do it again. apsupercast.com. Or you can hit us up via email at
atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
Or if that's not what you prefer to talk to us, if you like to do it socially with friends, like you could tag your friend and say, hey, douchebag number 3, you should join me in listening to this stupid fucking show. You can do that on the social media, facebook.com/APSupercast, twitter.com/APSupercast, or apsupercast.tumblr.com. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Until next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Two snakes facing each other.
Grom!
Hear the lamentations of the women.
Oh, God.